Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Tony, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
We had a great first hour of the show. We spent a lot of time talking about the silliness between the Cubs and the Rockies yesterday. I enjoyed Javi Baez getting some revenge by pimping his home run. Rizzo out there stealing bases in an 8-run game. That's how you get some get back. You get the win and you have a little fun. We are still going to discuss Tony watching hockey, because he did that hockey last night.
Let's do that hockey.
Yes, he did it. And there's actually some numbers that I think are interesting about the broadcast last night that I want to share. But that is after we have a conversation about buckets. The hour is being brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago. Our next guest is terrific. He does pre and post over on NBC Sports Chicago when it comes to Bulls basketball. He also has a really great Bulls Talk podcast over there, which you should check out. He knows the NBA. I wanted to pick his brain about Game 6 tonight and some Bulls stuff as well. He is Mark Schanowski, and he joins me here on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles are available for you at Alpamonte Ford. What's up, Mark? How are you?
Lawrence, how about yourself?
I'm doing really well. I saw that you had Casey Johnson on the Bulls Talk podcast. Well, what did you like about the conversation that you guys had?
Well, it's funny because Casey and I have been on the beat for a long time, and we've seen just about everything, going back to the championship years through the Tim Floyd disaster and various rebuilds along the way. And, you know, right now they're in a position where it's kind of a crossroads stage, and they could be aggressive and try to push the accelerator on the rebuild and make a couple of trades on draft night, maybe bring a couple of veterans here, or they could try to stay the course and try to see if this young nucleus can eventually develop into something good. So, you know, Casey and I are both against the Lonzo Ball thing. I just feel like that is just a minor upgrade over what you get with Chris Dunn. I would hate to see them cash in a number 7 pick, or even the possibility of them trading for the Lakers pick, which is number 4 overall, and including Zach LaVine. I mean, I think sometimes you get too infatuated with what might be instead of what you have right in front of you. And with the steps that Zach LaVine took this year towards becoming, you know, a borderline all-star player, I would be dead set against cashing him in for another draft pick.
Well, there's a lot of, like, rumors about the Bulls out there. I've even seen them in some circles attached to maybe they do an AD trade with the Pelicans. What do you think is actually possible for them to do as far as a trade with that number 7 pick or stuff that might be on their roster?
Well, I think if they want to get involved as a third team in the Anthony Davis talks between the Pelicans and Lakers, I think they probably could get Lonzo Ball just by including their number 7 pick to sweeten the pot for New Orleans. The Pelicans aren't that enamored with some of the young players that the Lakers are offering. Brandon Ingram, of course, has the health issues now after he had the blood clot scare last year, which ended Chris Bosh's career. They're not saying it's to that level in terms of an impact on his career, but it's something that you have to keep an eye on. They're looking for a third team to come in and offer them, you know, a high pick, a high lottery pick, and maybe another young player, so that maybe they end up with Kyle Kuzma, a player from another team, and 2 top 10 picks. That probably would do it to get an Anthony Davis trade done. As far as the Bulls are concerned, you know, I think right now they are looking at all options. there's a chance they could try to get involved in the Mike Conley talks, because the interesting thing about Conley, even though he's got a bloated contract, he's got two more years left on that deal, which would put him on the same timeline as Otto Porter. You could try to make the playoffs the next 2 years with Porter and Conley as your veteran leaders, and then those guys come off the books. Then you've got more to sell to potential free agents that hey, our young nucleus has developed at this point, and maybe you want to come on board. That would be the long play to try to do it. They could also just try to make their picks at 7 and 38. I hope that with the return of Wendell Carter Jr. and hopefully some health for the rest of the guys, that there just be a natural growth from the nucleus that they have right now.
Where do you fall on the they should bring Derrick Rose back spectrum?
You know, I will admit right off the top that Derrick was one of my favorite players to watch. You know, obviously he wasn't that outgoing with the media, but I thought that he was very sincere. I always enjoyed, you know, covering him and the brief conversations that we had. And so, you know, I have some sentimentality there. He was my son's favorite player as he was watching the game. And just from a story standpoint, you know, we in the media love good stories. I think it'd be fantastic. You could argue both sides of it, whether it's the best thing for the Bulls basketball-wise. But when you consider some of the names that are being bandied about, you know, Ricky Rubio and Darren Collison and Patrick Beverley and Corey Joseph, I would argue that Derek could have more impact than any of those guys, especially if you played him off the bench in controlled minutes.
Talking with Mark Schanowski, you can watch him on NBC Sports Chicago. You should listen to the Bulls Talk podcast. You subscribe to it because it is really good stuff. What's your opinion on how things have changed in the NBA as a whole with the Kevin Durant injury?
Well, it's going to change just about everything. People were talking about this seismic shift in the balance of power, and right now it looks like a lot of players just might wind up staying exactly where they are. Kevin Durant has a $31.5 million player option for next season. If he chooses, he could just rehab on the Warriors' dime, and then he could go into free agency completely healthy next summer, in the summer of 2020, and then sign wherever he wants. He could take a max deal from the Warriors if they're inclined to offer it, or he could take a max from the Knicks or somebody else that's okay with him sitting out next year just trying to get healthy again. But if he stays put, the assumption is Klay Thompson will re-sign with the Warriors. Kawhi Leonard, you wonder why he would want to leave if Toronto finishes off this championship in one of the next two games. And then, you know, Jimmy Butler could decide to re-sign with Philadelphia, and Kemba Walker is eligible for a supermax with Charlotte. So if you take the top six free agents off the board, all of a sudden this excitement about how everything's going to change in the NBA, you know, it might be more of the status quo. The one thing that I think will happen for sure is Anthony Davis will be traded somewhere. It seems very obvious that Rich Paul, his agent, is trying to push him to join LeBron with the Lakers. And I think with David Griffin now ensconced as the head of basketball operations for the Pelicans, I think he's more inclined to work out a deal with the Lakers than they were before when they were trying to force something at the deadline.
Mark, I got to tell you that to me, that what you said is the smartest course of action. I think that rehabbing on the Warriors' dime without expectation is the smartest way for Durant to go. He already has, like, I don't want to spend someone else's money, but he already has enough money. And I feel like if you go to New York, the New York thing is going to happen even while you're rehabbing. So why not rehab? And then if you do want to go to New York, you can do it next year. That to me makes the most sense.
The only thing might be if there is some animosity between Durant's camp and the Warriors. Now, everyone's saying that Durant's agent and he got a second medical opinion, and everyone was on board that it was the right thing to do to play. But you never know what he's thinking lying in that hospital bed, thinking about the fact that he might not play any basketball next season. He may hold some hard feelings towards someone or everyone in the Warriors organization and may just want to get out. He could also pick up an extra $7 million by signing a max deal with another team. Not that the $7 million, as you mentioned, is going to be that critical to the equation, but he could pick up a little bit of extra cash while he rehabs. And if he has any hard feelings towards the Warriors' doctors, their training staff, or anybody else, maybe he wants to get away from that and get a fresh start with his next team in their facility with their doctors and feel like he can get to know the coaching staff and his teammates while he rehabs. it's his decision. Obviously, he can decide what he wants. And there's also, you know, by the time he gets back for the 2020-21 season, he'll be 32 years old. And maybe Durant would just want the security of signing a five-year max with the Warriors. So, you know, as I mentioned, as he's lying in that hospital bed, he can ponder over all these things. But, you know, I think from a basketball standpoint, the easiest thing would be to just opt in, and then he would be an unrestricted free agent next summer with all options on the table.
In football, I know that there is a lot of skepticism from players about team doctors. I don't know if it's to that same level in the NBA, and I wonder if you think that we might see more players maybe on significant injuries going outside of the team complex to get their medical advice.
Well, it never hurts to get a second opinion, especially when you're dealing with possible career-threatening injuries. And, you know, it spoke volumes that after he suffered that horrible injury in Game 5, Kevin Durant did not return with the team to Oakland. He flew directly to New York for his own doctor, and then he had the surgery in New York at a hospital with a doctor of his choosing. So he was already undertaking that option that he had to seek a second opinion, and I think you're right. These superstar players are really mini corporations when you consider their outside business interests, their shoe deals, everything they've got going on. They have so much money at stake that why would you want to take the risk on possibly getting, you know, unsound medical advice? As I said, I don't think that Durant is blaming the Warriors for what happened. He's obviously an ultimate competitor. You know, we've seen him play in the summer at Rucker Park. You know, he could have easily gotten hurt in a game like that, but he loves to play. You know, a lot like with Michael Jordan in past days, he wrote into his contract that he could play basketball in the summertime. Durant is a competitor. He's a hooper, and he wants to be out there playing. So I think that there won't be any long-term resentment. It just may be a question of whether or not he wants to, you know, turn the page now and get involved with a new organization.
What's the most interesting thing about Game 6?
How can Steph Curry hold up to that Toronto pressure defense? You know, he had 47 points in Game 3 and almost single-handedly carried the Warriors to a win when they didn't have Durant or Klay Thompson in that game. In Game 4, Nick Nurse came out with a different strategy. They were double-teaming him off every screen and roll. They were blitzing him on those coverages, and Steph looked worn out, beaten down. You know, the Warriors have been to 5 straight finals, which means they played about 100 games each of the last 5 seasons. And as we saw with the Bulls three-peats, that third one is the toughest because you're just so worn down physically and mentally. And watching Steph right now, you can see that he's basically resting on the defensive end, and Toronto takes advantage of that. You know, they're back-cutting him. They're sending the guy he's covering to the offensive boards. Kyle Lowry's been able to get some second-shot opportunities for him. And right now, you know, Steph is fantastic. He's one of the best players in the league, probably the greatest shooter we've ever seen. But he's not superhuman. And right now, he's running on fumes. There's an age factor with the Warriors, with Iguodala and Sean Livingston. And, of course, Kevon Looney's been hurt. DeMarcus Cousins is probably playing at about 75% efficiency. They've got a lot of things going against him. I just think that right now Toronto is the deeper, stronger team, and they're probably more confident right now. The only thing that I think the Raptors have to worry about is the atmosphere at Oracle tonight. It's going to be crazy. You know, it's the last game ever in that old building, and they're going to try to lift up their team and carry them to a win in Game 6, and we'll see if the Raptors are up to the pressure in a closeout game. But I kind of like Toronto's chances to win it tonight. If they don't get it done today, I think they'll certainly win Game 7 in Toronto.
What did you think of the way that Nick Nurse used his timeouts in Game 5?
I thought it was just bizarre in terms of the explanation. You know, if he felt like, all right, we're approaching the 3-minute mark, we're up 6, we have the ball, I just want to get my guys in here, you know, go over the plays we're going to run, emphasize what our priorities are on defensive coverage against Steph and Klay, and, you know, just remind everybody that, you know, don't take any stupid fouls, whatever. If he wanted to get a message across, that's fine. But his explanation in the post-game news conference that, well, we had 3 timeouts, and if we didn't use it there, we would have lost it. I mean, that's something you say in a regular season game in February, not Game 5 with a championship on the line. So I thought he showed his inexperience there. You know, if he said he wanted to get his guys some extra rest. The reason they built that lead is they were pushing the pace, they were getting better shots in transition, and Kawhi was on a big-time roll. By calling the timeout, they let Steve Kerr draw up a couple of plays on offense and also set his coverages against Kawhi Leonard. So it totally backfired on Nurse, and if he's in a similar situation, I think he'll play it out tonight.
Yeah, I would imagine he would. It's been fun. Does anyone in the NBA know anything about Kawhi Leonard?
No. I mean, He is a total enigma. No one knows exactly what's going on inside of his head. The assumption all year long is that he, you know, he's a Southern California guy, that he would go back to L.A., probably play for Doc Rivers with the Clippers. But now, you know, if the Raptors close out this championship run, he's going to be beloved in Canada, an entire country, for the rest of his life. You know, there'll probably be a statue in front of Scotiabank Arena. I just think it's going to be tough for him just to pick up and leave after, you know, leading that team to a championship, all the adoration he's got from the Canadian fans, plus the realization the East has been the easier conference, and he could be set up for a great 3-4-5 year run with a chance to get to the finals. Now, ultimately, as you mentioned, no one knows what goes on inside his head and how important it is to get back to Southern California. He also could say, been there, done that. I checked all the boxes. I brought a title to Canada. Now I'm free to move on. And you know, there's probably not going to be a lot of people in Canada who would be hating on him after he brought them a title if he does decide to leave.
Mark, I appreciate the conversation as always. You do a tremendous job over at NBC Sports Chicago, and the Bulls Talk podcast is excellent. Thanks for being on the show today.
Lawrence, it was a lot of fun. It should be an interesting week ahead. I think we're going to see some trades leading up to draft night, and we'll see if the Bulls are in the middle of it.
All right, right on. Thanks, Mark. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Lawrence. So long.
That is Mark Schanowski of NBC Sports Chicago. That was some good stuff from Mark, especially with the Bulls maybe being interesting as this whole thing goes on. This segment is being brought to you by the Chicago Dogs. Tickets now on sale for the Chicago Dogs, your premier minor league baseball team. Get in the game this weekend with mini bat giveaway Friday, best post-game fireworks on Saturday, and catch on the field with Dad on Father's Day Sunday. Tickets are at thechicagodogs.com. The Chicago Dogs, baseball with everything. I my feeling on the Kawhi, if he wins a title, I think I actually go the other way. I feel like if he wins a title, he's like, mission accomplished. I'm getting out of here. He still gets to be the legend of Canada, but he doesn't have to stay there because he did what he went there. Well, not that he had a choice, but he did what he was asked to do, was win a title. And now you can be a little selfish if you want. I think that I would be okay with it. I don't know if Toronto and Canada would be, but
there's also the option of, you know, splitting the difference between him leaving and him staying. Is he just signs a shorter deal? Does another one and done maybe with Toronto, see if they can repeat, you know, this epic run and then go on from there? I think that's certainly a possibility.
Yeah, maybe, Tony, because if you were looking at Golden State, you would assume that they're going to be the Kevin Durant-less Golden State no matter what he decides. Whether he stays there to rehab or goes to New York, he won't be on the team next year. So you could do some things. And maybe you go, oh, well, you know, LeBron's still not going to be ready to roll yet in L.A. as far as championship level goes. I'll win this week Eastern Conference. I shouldn't say week. It's not week anymore. It's top heavy. I'll win this Eastern Conference again, and we'll take our chances with whatever comes out of the West. I think the whole thing is fascinating. But that's not why people came to this show today, Tony. People came to this show today because they wanted to know what your hockey viewing experience was like last night. And guess what? After a timeout, we are going to give the people what they want. Tony did that hockey, and we're going to discuss it next here on The Score.
As they say in hockey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Let's do that hockey.
So last night was Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. The Blues won. They beat Boston 4-1 to capture the Cup. On this show, we had a hockey novice in one Tony Gill, the executive producer of the show, lean into the experience. We as a show, both me, Rick Camp, and you, the listener, convinced Tony that he should at least take in a little bit of Game 7 and try to enjoy it. And Tony did. He was actually tweeting last night, and you should be following Tony on Twitter at TonyGill670. All right, Tony, I'm curious. What did you take away from your viewing experience last night? Empty your notebook.
First of all, hockey, dangerous AF. Like, there's running around on knives, and there was at one point a broken hockey stick, and there's, like, jagged wood everywhere. Well, phrasing. And, like, they're just skating around it, like, nothing's there. Yeah, hockey, dangerous. I'm glad I never played it, ever.
Well, did you enjoy watching it at all, or?
Yeah, it was lit, though. Yeah, definitely. I guess how I view it now, because of like all the baseball that I've been experiencing of late, watching a fast-paced game finishing up in a couple hours, that was very entertaining for me. And a change of pace was excellent.
Yeah, it's definitely a change of pace from baseball. It's probably the most violent change of pace from baseball, because you got guys going back and forth up the ice. You got the different things. And like Boston in that first period, like their puck possession, it felt like you were playing in the blue zone like the whole period, and it didn't seem to matter how good Binnington was last night. It was fun. All right, so listen, I wanted to share this with you, this sound, because I think one of the great things once you get to this portion of hockey is Doc Emmerich. And I think that Doc Emmerich is right up there, like at the top of the national play-by-play guys.
Oh yeah, he was great.
He's really, really good.
Really good.
And here's an example. This was late in the game where Doc is setting up and then has a save. The way that he is able to keep pace with the action and bring genuine enthusiasm to the broadcast is fantastic.
To the back, Carlo, and that one kicked free in front by Shen. Gathered up by a cherry save. Rebound in front. Oh, and a remarkable play by Binnington, as it could not be poked home on the rebound by Nordstrom. What a stop. And then this one sent to the corner. Pareko goes in there, Nordstrom on him.
He's so great. Highlight courtesy of NBC. So you got a chance to really experience Doc last night. What did you think?
I tweeted out that I'm having like heart palpitations because of the way he's expressing what's going on in the game. Even if like, you know, I went to the bathroom or I'm trying to get something to eat, I didn't feel like I was like away from it too much because he was so descriptive and detailed and so energetic about it. I'm like, how old is this dude? Like, he can't be doing this for long, right?
He's
like,
in his 70s.
Whoa.
So here's the thing that I love, and you're right, Tony, I love about Doc, and maybe hockey overall. There is a level of, like, even if we're just talking sonically, there's a place that those guys can hit routinely that other play-by-play guys are not allowed to do. Like, Doc going crazy over that save in the third period, you're not going to hear a lot of baseball announcers go crazy for like a home run or a great defensive play. Like, they're going to describe it. They're going to do their job, but they're not the level up again, rack it up again, because there's a couple things here. You've got a guy who's really doing a radio broadcast because he's that descriptive. His vocabulary is out of this world. And then in the middle of it, he is able to still enjoy the action while sharing what's going on.
Puck to the back, Carlo, and that one kicked free in front by Shen. Gathered up by a cherry save. Rebound in front. Oh, and a remarkable play by Binnington, as it could not be poked home on the rebound by Nordstrom. What a stop. And then this one sent to the corner. Pareko goes in there, Nordstrom on him.
It's so great. Like, hearing him, and then you add in that Eddie's like the best analyst. So you've got the exactly what you want. I think that hockey might be the only sport. Wow, I mean, I'm just having this realization right now. Hockey at the highest level may be the only sport where all of us can agree on the play-by-play guy and the analyst. Think about that for a second. If we look at if you think that Al Michaels is the best play-by-play guy, you might have a problem with Chris Collinsworth.
I don't know why.
I don't know why either. if you like Tony Romo, you might not like Jim Nantz, or vice versa. There are lots of people who hate on Joe Buck for no good damn reason, but they still hate on him. But in hockey, I think we're all like, yeah, the best play-by-play guy, the best color guy are doing the best broadcast.
I think part of it is because we don't know that many other options as opposed to the other sports.
Well, I mean, Kenny Albert's really good. But
yeah, I still think it's those two guys. Don't get me wrong. But I think that's part of the reason more names don't get brought up.
Well, you know, the thing is that when there are B or C or D, when the playoffs start, there isn't an analyst other than Eddie that I'm like, I need to hear from. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that it rises to the same level. It's but everyone, like, it is unanimous that Doc is the dude when it comes to play-by-play. And I think it's pretty much unanimous that Eddie's the best analyst. The only issue that people have with that broadcast is Pierre Maguire. That's the issue, because you don't need him. Because of what the wordplay that goes back and forth between Doc and Eddie, you don't need Pierre Maguire to kind of give you the, well, what do you think is going to happen here? You don't need that. Or him going, what do you think about that, Edzo? You don't need it. It's a weird thing, man, but it is a lot of fun to hear and watch those guys. Well, I'm glad that you had a good time. Okay, so while all of this was going on, Tony was on Twitter, and Tony, you got like a lot of feedback, right, on Twitter while you were live tweeting the game.
Yeah, it was crazy. It's by far the most engagement with different people, you know, since I've been on Twitter. And I've been obviously been covering the Bulls and did some other stuff with basketball things. But yeah, hockey was the one that did it for me. Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, there were lots of people who wanted to help you enjoy what you were watching, and I thought that was cool.
Yeah, Evan F. Moore. Roy Bellamy from Levitard Show got in on it. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, so we're kind of doing, you know, this was Jason's idea, the Brothers for Hockey thing, when we were back, 2009, when we started going to Blackhawks games, when the Blackhawks were starting to get good. And I used to have a Blackhawk on the show once a week. Now, Tony, did you know that?
Black Dudes for Hockey?
Yeah, did you know that I had a Blackhawks player on my show once a week?
I did not know that.
No, it happened before he started interning at the Score. So if it happened at the Score, he didn't know.
Yes, I had a guy with me every week. We'd go out, we'd do shows just like the Miller Lite Top Draft Show. We would do the same type of thing where me and this hockey player would go out. Now I'm gonna.
Wow, you guys dedicated that much time to hockey?
Yeah, we actually used to be the Blackhawks flagship station, Tony.
Really?
Yes.
Like I said.
Yes.
Wow, the more you know.
Yes, we used to have, we actually got rid of the Blackhawks right before they got good. So I'm going to spell this guy's name. The guy that I used to do the show with, and I want you to figure, you got a pen, I want you to write this down.
Okay.
And I want to see if you can pronounce his name.
All right.
Okay?
Here we go.
B-Y-F-U-G-L-I-E-N.
Ooh. Bifuglian. Bifugian. Bifuglian. Bifuglian is my wait. Bifuglian. And that's gonna be my final answer.
All right.
Okay, Tony, what country do you think he is from?
Ooh, Russia.
He is not from Russia.
Okay.
Wanna try again? It is hockey.
Okay.
So if he's not from Russia, where might he be from?
Canada.
Or?
I pretty much think those are the only two countries.
Stick with hockey. How about this? Let's say he was near Canada.
Oh, he's from here?
Yes, he's from Minnesota.
With a name like that?
Well, I mean, there's a reason why his name is like that, too, because of his background.
So he is Russian.
He is not Russian.
Okay.
I'll show him a picture of him right now.
Yeah, you should probably, because I think it's probably going to blow his mind.
Whoa!
Exactly. That's Dustin Byfuglien. That's how you say his last name. That's why you saw me on Twitter refer to him as Buff last night.
Okay.
Cool. So me and Buff, when he was playing for the Blackhawks, we used to do a show together once a week. We take the show out on the road. He was a lot of fun. He's a very interesting dude.
All right, I'll put him on the list of guests.
Well, I don't know if a phoner would be great with Buff. You kind of need to be in his presence. But yes, he is actually, I think you and Buff would get along really well.
Really? Why?
I just think that you guys have some similar interests that you could exploit. And it would be fun.
I'm here for it.
And he is, and he should be one of your favorite players, Tony, because he is all about that smoke.
Oh, he's still in the league?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so here's what I want you to do. Either during the break or later today, look up Dustin Byfuglien fights. Because he's a good player who also will kick your ass.
Oh, stay ready, All-Star?
Yes, he is that dude. Was it last year during the playoffs where he was holding two guys? Like no one wanted it with him at all. And he was holding two other players, like, by their shirt collars, like, don't try me. Yeah, he's that type of dude. But he's very laid back when he's not on the ice. Good guy. Absolutely, I have a lot of fun when he and I used to do the show together. But yes, that was a thing that happened. The Score used to have Blackhawks games, and Dustin Byfuglien used to be on once a week. Brothers for Hockey. We are going to take Tony to a game. Me, Evan, we'll invite Jason, a couple other people, because one of my interns works over there.
So you don't need me to get in the door?
No, I think we're good, but you can come along if you want.
I'm in.
Cool. You can hang out with Brothers for Hockey. Maybe we'll make it a big, like, thing.
Yeah, Kemp could be a brother for hockey.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of our brothers, even though he's not a brother. So he can just come along. I think it's fine. We'll check with Evan. He's in charge. So we'll ask him if Rick Kemp coming is okay. It'll be fine. We need to take a break. Back after this on The Score.
Lots of white dudes on skates running into each other at full speed. I don't get it.
But Tony still enjoyed himself last night. We're going to try and make Brothers for Hockey. That's trademarked by Jason Goff, by the way. We're going to try to make it happen. So if you're listening over at the UC Blackhawks, we would like to come out for a game. And it'll be Tony's first Blackhawks game. And I think it'll be an excellent, excellent thing. This segment is being brought to you by Campland RV. Head on over to Campland RV. Their 58th anniversary sale is going on now through the end of June. Find great deals on RVs and campers. Campland RV, RV buying made easy. Just a short drive off I-94 in Northwest Indiana. And this segment is being brought to you by Northwestern Football. It's almost time. We're getting close. Go see them this year because they've got a number 17 preseason ranking and they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets are on sale now at NUSports.com. Since we were talking about hockey, I thought you might find this interesting because yesterday I said one of the reasons that Chicago should be a higher rated market for the game was because there was no baseball to watch last night and there are a lot of people who were going to hate watch because it was St. Louis. Get this. They did really good numbers. So the overnight rating.
You're welcome, hockey.
Yeah, Tony, you brought people to the TV. The overnight rating for Game 7 was a 6.2. That's a monster number. So monster for hockey. So monster, in fact, that it is the highest rated NHL game since they started tracking them 25 years ago. So it beat Game 6 of your 2010 Stanley Cup Final, Hawks Flyers, which was a 5.84 rating. Here's something that I thought was kind of interesting. With the caveat of the football team moved away from St. Louis, even though there were a lot of Rams fans that were interested in the Super Bowl, the Super Bowl in St. Louis drew a 39.8 rating. Game 7 drew a 41.8 rating. That's interesting to me. And I'm sure there are plenty of Rams fans who are like, screw the Rams, I'm going to root for the Bears or the Colts or the Vikings or whomever. But for hockey to get that type of number in St. Louis, pretty good. And good for hockey to get a bigger number than the Blackhawks because they're kind of the ratings king of the NHL. So congratulations. Y'all did that hockey last night. We all did. I'm going to talk with McNeil and Parkins next here on The Score.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Pizza.
Well, not quite. I'm not quite out of here yet because Lakeside Bank is telling me that it's time to talk with McNeil and Parkins. Lakeside Bank, it's about time. I am Lawrence Holmes. We had a great show today. Thanks to our guest. Mark Schanowski was terrific on the show, breaking down game 6 tonight and talking a little bit about the Bulls maybe being a player in trading during this crazy time that's getting ready to happen after this series closes. And thanks to Scott Merkin for talking about the piece that he did on Aloy and Mitch and how those guys have been friends for a while. It was good to see them hang out with each other last week at the ballpark. Here are McNeil and Parkins.
Lawrence, it's good to see you. Do you enjoy seeing us a little bit more than you might typically because you're kind of on the island here in the kitchen and don't have the eye contact with your producers
like
for 2 hours?
Him. Yeah. Like, we were the first people that he comes in contact
right.
with.
Right. I mean, for the first time in a couple of months, he actually, hey, there's McNeil and Parkins. I said, oh, those bags.
Well, taking up 10 minutes of my time.
It is so crazy, though, because there is the fishbowl element of being in this room. And seeing, we're right across from our performance studio, like someone was performing today. I guess there are a couple acts that are going to be in. And then people just, even though there's stuff on the door, they just roll. They just roll up in here.
Yeah, just pop in.
It's casual.
Feel like they should throw marshmallows at us, don't you, when people walk by like we're in the zoo sort of?
Dude, better than tomatoes.
If they threw marshmallows, I'd be totally fine.
I would eat the marshmallows. I'm a big fan of the toasted marshmallow. Absolutely. Toasted until almost burned. Really, really dark brown. That's how you toast
the
marshmallow.
That's the way that it's supposed to be. I don't know people that just want the gooey. I don't get why you just want the gooey. I want a little bit of burnt on there.
Crispy edge.
I'd be concerned if it was still on fire, though. You know, when they catch flame and they're throwing it toasted at you.
You got to wait until it goes out a little bit. That's the best idea. Lawrence, we're going to have Jed Hoyer on in just a few minutes, the fine Cubs general manager, to talk to him about all things Cubs and the near rumble in the Rocky Mountains over the last couple of days. It's always fun when baseball's meathead instincts come out, and they sure did in yesterday's game, and lots of ways to cut that up. And also, we're going to talk with a guy named Jason Terry, I believe is his name. Is that right?
Josh Terry.
Josh Terry.
Jason Terry is the basketball
player.
Yeah,
Jason Terry. Right. Josh is the guy who wrote this.
Piece on Vice.
His thesis is that disco demolition 40 years ago today was racially motivated. It was not. I lived the disco era and made a decision on this day 40 years ago. Right now, 40 years ago, right now, Lawrence, I was thinking, do I take my girlfriend to the drive-in or do I go to disco demolition? Because I'd been anti-disco as well and had written about that for my high school newspaper 6 months prior to Steve's very cool radio gas.
What was your experience like there?
I didn't go. I went to the drive-in.
Oh, yeah.
I went to the drive-in, but I was very happy to talk to my buds. But what those of us who didn't like disco were upset about was we found the music to be offensive. And it wasn't that, like our guy Josh wrote, that it was against black artists. You know, the Bee Gees were white. Rod Stewart was a white artist who had a rock and roll background. And we were pissed off at the world that our genre was dying. Classic rock was going through a death rattle in the late 1970s, and we saw it as a turn for the worse. So a lot of us who were old rockers just found that offensive, as we did the Stones album, Some Girls, in 1978. A lot of people didn't like it because it had a disco beat.
Yeah, we were actually talking about this in transition with Bernstein and McKnight today, and I was saying how it's a really... it's a difficult issue for me because of how much I idolize Steve Dahl, but also my brother is a house musician and house, you know, is begat from disco.
Right.
So I understand why people would feel like it was an assault on their culture and their music, but I also have never thought that Steve, that was his intent.
No.
Intent matters.
No.
Intent matters. No. And also, there's also the part... Well, one, actually, Mac, for whatever it's worth, it was July 12th, and they're doing it on June 13th. So I don't really get why they're doing it 39 years and 11 months to the day, as opposed to actually...
Well, it's All-Star break, right? Isn't...
Yeah, but they're in
not
town.
There for the actual date. You think they should move a little bit closer to the date?
The Tigers are in town July, I think, 2nd through the 4th, and the game for Disco Demolition was actually against the Tigers.
So you could do it then.
So you could do it then instead of during Pride Month, but obviously Pride Month became a thing well after Disco Demolition. And there's also, like, a lot of things that happened in 1979, if you put them through a 2019 prism, can be looked at very differently. And I think that that's just the reality of our times.
Sure.
I had never considered this, obviously. I'm not a music fan. I am, however, a radio fan. So like, I have one of those vintage Disco Demolition t-shirts because I love radio stunts. But I had never considered
greats.
This point of view at all. So I'm interested as someone who lived through it and then someone who has this perspective to kind of talk it out. And I'll be an observer because I had never considered this point of view.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing it too. And I wish we could discuss it more, but you guys have Jed Hoyer and I don't want to stand in the way of that. But I just think that it's one of those things where it's unintended consequences of, you know, people feeling like their culture is being assaulted. And you want to make it known. And I think that it is easier for us in hindsight to look at it and go, was that an assault on the culture?
Yeah.
Or was it just...
Boy, my memories of it have nothing to do... I'm as completely colorblind because I lived it and it was all about the music. And the Rolling Stones then were 100% white. This is before Daryl Jones, the pride and joy of CVS, joined band in 1994.
100% white, but a lot of stolen stuff.
Oh, sure.
People.
Of course. Yes. Well, yeah.
There is that.
Absolutely. Look who their heroes were, man. Come on. Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf.
They come into town. They hang out. And then out of here. All right. I'm going to get out of you guys' way. Have fun with Jed Hoyer. I can't wait for this interview that you guys are going to do with the guy from Vice. It's going to be great. See you guys tomorrow.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.